Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
Hello, this is international Catholic singer Anna Nuzzo, inviting you to join me and Father Dan Cambra of the Marian Fathers on a select international tour's Divine Mercy pilgrimage to Poland and the Czech Republic. It takes place in September of 2019, and we would love for you to join us. For more information, go to my website, annanuzzo.com. Thank you, and God bless.
Do you wish you knew the saints better? Overwhelmed with all the events in Catholic history and just wish you could tie it all together? It's tough work, and even scientists have determined that it takes approximately 400 repetitions to create a new synapse in the brain, unless it is done with play, in which case it takes between 10 and 20 repetitions. Introducing Saint Cards, where the facts about saints and history are presented in fun and engaging games for ages 4 to 104. Check out Saint Cards at saintcards.com and begin the fun for your family, school, and parish today.
Introducing the redesigned CatholicSingles.com, featuring new ways that put the spotlight on the person and their faith, not just a profile picture. For the past 20 years, faithful Catholics have used CatholicSingles.com, and the reimagined CatholicSingles.com website is ready to help single Catholics take the next step in sharing meaningful relationships with other faithful Catholics. Remember, CatholicSingles.com for faith, fellowship, and love.
Wait a minute! 60 Seconds of Reflection with Martha Fernandez-Sardina.
He is risen! The Lord is risen from the dead. That is the song of Christians. The Lord is risen, alleluia. He is truly risen, as he said, alleluia, alleluia. For centuries, Christians the world over have been celebrating the fact that Christ defeated death. He killed death. Death is dead. Life is alive. And Jesus is alive and well. And he is inviting each one of us, knocking at the door of our hearts, to enter in, to sup with us, to dine with us, to give us his very body and blood, soul and divinity as our food. Will you welcome him? Will you season it up? Will you enjoy this Easter Sunday, Easter octave, and Easter season, 50 days of glorious celebration, and come closer to Jesus to receive the new life that he has won for you? You are one by one, one who is God Almighty. Enjoy Easter, enjoy the resurrection, enjoy Jesus.
For more information about Martha, visit MarthaFernandezSardina.com.
Yeah. Here we go. There it is. There's that symbol. Welcome, everybody, to Beneath the Surface here this beautifully miserable rainy evening. Glad you could join us, my fellow truth seekers. Beneath the Surface, where faith and reason meets every Monday evening between 10 and 11 p.m. Beneath the Surface, attempting to bring a little sanity into our age of insanity, a little life into our culture of death. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentle creatures. Glad you could be here tonight with us. Paul Morano here with my guest, Mr. Kent Niebuhr. Kent, welcome.
How you doing, Paul?
Complain I can't.
All right. So as you're reading your intro there, I'm wondering, you know, this is Beneath the Surface, where faith and reason meet. Where else do faith and reason meet?
Way above the surface.
Yeah, where can...
Like in heaven.
Where can our listeners find the meeting place of faith and reason when we're not on the air?
St. Thomas Aquinas.
All right. Is
and,
that it?
In the Magisterium of the Church.
Are there magisterial outlets?
The Catechism of the Catholic Church is where I find where faith and reason meet.
Okay, that's
the,
good.
The most.
What if you find St. Thomas Aquinas difficult to read?
Well, then get books that explain Aquinas, like, The Summa of the Summa, which is my favorite book.
Who wrote that?
Peter Kreeft, Dr. Peter Kreeft, yeah. And
what does that mean, Summa of the Summa?
This is not...
Is that a book on Japanese wrestling?
Yeah, it's all about Japanese wrestling. And, yeah, that's exactly where faith and reason meet, right in the middle of the sumo wrestlers.
When they meet?
Yes, yes. Well, anyway, faith and reason are two avenues to the same truth, as well as the scientific method. So if you have real faith, real reason or logic, and real science, they can never contradict each other.
I think the word science comes from a Latin word that means understanding. No, wait, that's intelligum scientia. What does that mean? I think it means...
Well,
knowledge?
Logia.
Logia in Greek.
Has to do with understanding of the nature of things.
Right.
And that's why all of the things that many of the sciences are end with that, like biology, psychology, right. All of those ologies. So it basically, yeah, it means the science or the understanding of a particular discipline. But anyway... Let's not have our listeners fall asleep here tonight. Kent, a little bit about your week before we start getting beneath the surface.
It was Easter. I don't know if you noticed, but
I did.
Yesterday was a big day.
Yeah, it still
it
is.
Easter.
Today is Easter Monday.
We have the Easter season.
Yeah. Well, distinct from the Easter season, we have the Easter octave.
Yeah, we're in the Easter octave.
Easter is actually a week, not a day, in the Christian calendar.
Can you sing an Easter octave?
I can't.
Okay.
Yeah. But tonight, ladies and gentle persons, we go beneath the surface on the topic, surrendering to the will of God, no matter how difficult. Now, let me repeat that one more time. Surrendering to the will of God, no matter how difficult. I'm looking forward to delving beneath the surface on this topic. I know Kent
Me
has
too.
A lot. Yeah, I know you have
I don't
a lot
know anything about this.
You
I can't wait to hear what you have to say.
You have a lot to say about it, Kent, and like you told me outside of this off the air. Before I get into all of that incredible depths of knowledge and wisdom that you have on this topic, Cindy, behind the glass, that's not her name, but that's where she's located from my eyesight. Cindy, our producer of Beneath the Surface, how you doing? Can you hear me?
I'm doing great.
Oh, there you are. Did you have a nice Easter, Cindy?
It was fine.
Good, fantastic. How are you doing tonight?
A little tired, but I'll be fine.
Good. I hope you stay awake throughout Beneath the Surface. I hope we don't put you to sleep tonight. Yes.
And I hope whatever tired you out was worth it. I know, you know, staying up late with friends or staying up late doing some, you know, enriching things.
Enriching things.
You always pay a price being tired, but it's kind of worth the trade.
Okay. Thank you for that word of wisdom, Mr. Katz. Okay. So tonight, let's get right to it. Delving beneath the surface on the question of surrendering to the will of God, no matter how difficult. Kent, I think we need to define a couple of things first before we delve. And basically, we have two ideas there. Number one, surrendering to the will of God. And number two, no matter how difficult. So, here's my first question to you. How does one know what the will of God is?
Wow, we could talk about that for a very long time. But I would say this. If you are concerned about the salvation of your soul, if you are concerned about being the type of person that God made you to be, you're probably in a place, you're probably of a mental and spiritual disposition where God is, where you're docile to God, where you're useful to God, where you're an agent of God's work in the world. In other words, if you're a prayerful person, especially if you're close to the sacraments, you know, generally confession and the Eucharist on a regular basis, and you're always conscious of the presence of God around you, you're always aware that He's with you, that He's watching over everything you do, and not necessarily in a, you know, a scary kind of way. I mean,
or a superstitious kind of thing.
Right. Exactly.
All right. So I understand. That's the first half. So if you're close to God, therefore what?
Therefore, you're going to be receptive to his voice. Jesus talks about people who they have eyes, but they don't see.
What do you mean by voice?
God, with or without your conscious awareness, can use you to do his work in the world. And
no question about that, but what do you mean by voice?
So, yeah, not necessarily a literal voice, not like you're going to be hearing things, but you will feel these impulses. I shouldn't say feel, but you will be.
It's not emotional, you're saying.
Right. It's not an emotional feeling like, a thrill or something like that.
Okay.
But you will become aware of things. Like, you might have this fleeting thought that you should pray right now.
Okay.
That's easy to ignore. It's easy to go on without praying. You say, okay, yeah, maybe I should pray, but I'm gonna do something.
I need to, I'm the kind of person where if I hear something good, I need to break it down a little bit. So you're saying, Kent, that if you have a fleeting thought in your mind that you didn't consciously put there yourself, and it's a godly thought, like I should stop, say I'm vegging out on television.
Yeah.
I should shut this off and pray instead.
Right.
Now that's a fleeting thought. It went through my mind. I didn't consciously put it there. You're saying this might be the voice of God telling me to do something good here.
Right. Okay. You know, I should stop doing this and it doesn't even have to be something like prayer. Like,
I
should get up to go. It should be like, you know what? I should go see if my wife needs help. I should go, you know, maybe I should go wash the dishes now instead of watching TV.
Well, how do you know that's just not your human, good will that is acting right there instead of the voice of God? Or could you say that?
I would say they're not mutually exclusive.
That's what I was about to say.
Yeah.
It's not mutually exclusive. So then are you saying that the voice of goodwill of the person who loves God can be trusted as perhaps God's voice?
Not absolutely.
Okay. Then how do you distinguish?
Because we can be deceived. I mean, the way St. Paul puts it in one of his letters.
That's right.
Is the devil comes to us disguised as the angel of light. So we have to be careful. You know, this is why I sort of set this up with, if we're generally prayerful people, if we stay close to the sacraments, if we're always conscious of what is God's will in my life, what does God expect of me in this moment, in this circumstance, you know, in my career, in my marriage, things like that. If we kind of think along these lines, not that we're obsessive about it, but we're just aware that we're put here by God for a purpose.
You have that divine awareness, that eternal perspective on life that you live every day. So it's not just, you're not looking at life as a materialistic animal would look at life.
Right. But you're also not necessarily thinking that, in order to, you know, to be a holy person, I have to go on a mountaintop somewhere and, you know, flee the world. And, you know, you could be just what we would call a normal guy, right?
No. Yeah, you could be a maintenance worker, you could be a doctor, it doesn't matter what you are.
Regular sort of,
I understand.
You know,
I'm just talking
life.
About that consciousness of the eternal perspective that one should have no matter what they do in life.
Right.
In their everyday living.
Yeah.
Which of course would afford oneself to raising one's mind to heaven and prayer now and then, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah, exactly. And in fact, St. Paul says we should be in constant prayer. And, you know, if you think about that and you think of the way we kind of tend to fall into thinking about prayer, like, I have to have my hands folded and I have to be kneeling or by my bedside or whatever. It's, wow. So St. Paul says I need to be constantly doing that. I need 24/7. I should be kneeling next to my bed saying, you know, the Our Father and the Now I Lay Me Down to Sleep. That's not what he means.
Yeah.
What he's talking, and now that kind of prayer is fantastic. We should definitely do that kind of prayer, but there are different kinds of prayer. There are different modes of prayer.
And tonight's show isn't on prayer, but you're right. There are four basic modes. There's contemplative prayer, there's meditative prayer, there's vocal, traditional prayer, and, there's spontaneous prayer too.
Yep.
So,
right.
We could do a whole show on prayer and one day we will.
But I'm talking about is just living your life conscious of the fact that God has placed you in every moment, every instant, every immeasurable instant of your life. He's placed you where you are.
And is sustaining you in every instant.
Exactly.
In every moment.
If he weren't actively willing your existence, you would cease to
annihilated.
Exist.
Yes.
You would not exist.
And everything could be annihilated if God
turned
his metaphorical back on his creation.
Right.
Okay. So all that said, how do we distinguish between the voice of the world, the voice of the evil one sounding good to you, the voice of your own intellect, which is your own goodwill, or the voice of God? Now, I just gave you four potential voices there. Yeah. How do you distinguish between those four?
Well, a lot of it is very simplistically, or very simply, it's just, what do we know of God? What have we been handed on about God? You know, you could read the Gospels. You could read, well, you could read the whole Bible. You could, like you were saying when we were talking a little bit earlier, you could read the Catechism. You could go to Mass. You could hear the Gospels proclaimed. You could learn the prayers of the Church. The prayers of the Church, you know, some people complain about them, that they're so formulaic and it's not your words. You should only pray with your, but the formulaic prayers of the Church teach us something about God, and they teach us something about ourselves, and they teach us something about ourselves in relation to God.
All right.
And so if you know these things, you have been handed, you have been given like a decoder ring.
Right. You're given all the that's a good analogy, or all the tools that you need. But I want to answer where the tire hits the road, if I could. Mm-hmm. And that is, you gave a very simple example a few minutes ago, that you're doing something. Say you're watching television and a thought comes into your mind, maybe I should get up and help my wife in the kitchen.
Right.
How do I know at that moment that's not the voice of my own goodwill, the voice of the evil one, because actually God doesn't want me to do that.
Yeah.
The voice of the world, or the voice of God? How do I know which one of those it is?
Well, I'll tell you one litmus test that I use.
Yeah.
What I try to be on the lookout for selfishness, laziness, things of this nature. Yeah. And if the choice I've just presented myself with is sitting on the couch or doing the dishes, and I can see how doing the dishes really benefits my family, and I can't really see how sitting on the couch really benefits my family.
Or anybody.
Can't really see how it even benefits me, other than I'm just taking a load off, right? I'm just relaxing.
But now
which
you're...
Which is okay.
I understand, but what you're saying now is that you are depending upon your own intellect and understanding that.
Of selfishness and of laziness.
Yeah, of understanding that is what I'm saying.
Right.
So your intellect is intricately involved in understanding God's voice. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely.
All right, it's not like God's voice comes outside of your own mind and your own will.
No, no. Yeah, exactly. So in other words, when the Bible says we're made in God's image and likeness, we think God is the ultimate knower of things, is the ultimate intellect. So therefore, if we're in his image, we have an intellect too, which is godlike, or ought to be godlike. We can work with that.
There's a lot of people out there saying, well, I don't know what to do with my life now. And particularly young people who don't know whether to get married, whether to stay with this guy or girl, whether if they're of a religious bent, perhaps becoming a religious or a priest. How do we discern that? And then we're going to get into the meat of our conversation, and that is, how do we surrender to the will of God when it's extremely difficult for us? That's the meat of our conversation tonight. We'll get to that and other things after this break. You're listening to Beneath the Surface. I'm Paul Morano. My guest this week, Mr. Kent Niebuhr, and you, delving beneath the surface on this and other questions. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere. Is the Beneath the Surface hotline. 978-454-4980. Or you can comment anytime you want at paulmorano.com. And there you will see Beneath the Surface at paulmorano.com, my relatively new website that I'd love you to check out. paulmorano.com. All right, so Kent, tonight we're delving beneath the surface, as you know, on the topic of surrendering to the will of God, no matter how difficult.
We started out by doing a show on discernment, though.
Yes, that's true. Discerning the will of God, because we had to ask, well, how do we know the? In other words, if you're going to surrender to the will of God, you have to. It presumes that you know the will of God in order to make that choice to surrender to it.
Right.
So, generally speaking, wouldn't you say that the will of God, in a general sense, is is basically the natural law? God is God is the creator and designer of our human nature. And whatever is fulfilling to us, to our families, and to society is the will of God.
Right. Now, it gets very complicated, though. You know, I mean, I'm sure you're aware of all these classical philosophical dilemmas about, you know, you have a choice. You could either, you know, the trolley car is out of control, and you could either do this where one person dies, or you could do that where five people die. And, you know, you have to make them, you have to choose.
Yeah. Right.
So things can be very complicated. We understand that, right? And we understand that even though you're trying to do the will of God at any given time, even that can be very difficult to figure out.
But a lot of people distinguish, I think there is a distinguishing out there when people talk about this, between the will of God as in the best thing to do in this time, and that relates to the virtue of prudence, and the will of God as in the voice of God speaking to me.
Yeah. Right.
I know this is huge, but what is the difference between those two concepts?
Well,
and can they contradict?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, put it to you this way. Just because I'm a human being doesn't mean I have to be like any particular other human being. Like, you know, I'm a man and I'm a Catholic. That doesn't mean I have to be a priest to be holy.
Right.
Right? God calls me. God calls every human being who ever existed
to be the best they can,
to great holiness,
yes.
Right?
Which means the same thing. I don't want people to think, oh, holiness, that's religious-y.
Right.
No, it just means to be the best you can be with the help and guidance of God.
To be exactly what or who God made you to be.
Exactly.
To fulfill your mission in life, you could say.
To fulfill the potential that God has given you. Yes.
So one of the things I do want to bring up is we shouldn't try to do this alone. I know everything we talked about up until this point is just you sort of analyzing your situation, analyzing your thoughts and so on.
Right.
But we need to have access to good and holy people who are also of the mind that we need to do God's will in this life.
Self-centered people around you do not help you in this in this discernment process.
Right. Yeah. So there's something in the Catholic Church called spiritual direction. And so if you can have a spiritual director, meet with them on a regular basis, and they say, and you can sort of, you know, it's sort of the striving for holiness version of what people go to like a counselor for, like a psychologist for,
right?
But this is purely to discern the will of God in your life.
Okay.
Right?
Right.
So,
by the way, short of that.
Yep.
Good friends and good family members could also help in that discernment.
Right. And what do we mean by good, Paul Morano?
No, I understand. That's huge, actually, that question. Good is unselfish, understanding the will of God as has been revealed, in my understanding, of course, in my tradition, that has been revealed through the Catholic Church. So I understand through natural law and church teachings, the commandments, the councils, basically the teachings of the magisterium of the church, what, generally speaking, the will of God is for me as a human being.
Generally speaking.
Yeah, now, as a human being.
Yep.
Now, as Paul, of course, it continues to go over and above that. But as a human being, I can't go past those parameters of the natural law as dictated through the commandments and the teachings of Christ. Now, if I'm doing that, then I know I'm living the will of God, how imperfectly that may be. But then there's that extra thing that I'm not only a human being, but I'm the particularly unique person, Paul, that is going to live God's will a bit differently than the unique person, Kent. So then that needs an extra discernment. That basic discernment is that religious discernment. You know, what does God expect of me as a human being? Then, of course, step two is, what does God expect of me as Susan or as John or as, you know...
Yeah, and the other approach to this, you mentioned St. Thomas Aquinas, to sort of take the via negativa, to look at it from the other side, is that as a human being, there are certain things that no human being should ever do.
Correct.
Right? So I need to be aware of those also.
That's what I mean. We need to know the boundaries of how to act as a human being.
Right.
Yeah.
And how not to act as a human being. I was actually having a conversation not too long ago where someone was saying, you know, when you're sort of steeped in sin, when you're carrying such a heavy weight of sin with you, you start to think like an animal.
Yeah.
You start to think like a beast.
You do.
Like, it's just survival.
What becomes primary are the sensual appetites and survival.
Exactly. Yeah. So when you're in that state, you have failed to rise to the level of the human being that God made you to be.
Yes.
Illuminatingly, if I can say that, in the book of Genesis, when God creates everything, God creates man and beast on the very same day, but then he distinguishes humanity from the animals by giving them faith,
giving them a spiritual soul first.
Right, yeah. Right. So, we see this, the way this is portrayed in Genesis, is the seventh day God commands Adam and Eve to rest with him, to observe the day of rest with God, the Sabbath, right?
Yeah, which is basically another way of saying be with God and worship God.
But the beasts are not, even though, you know, my 8-year-old just said yesterday, you know, we're basically animals, right?
Yeah.
If you look at us simply biologically, you could say, I mean, if I'm looking, if I'm cutting open a human being, I could find a heart, lungs, liver, kidneys.
We are the species Homo sapiens.
Exactly.
Homo sapiens sapiens.
And I could cut open a pig or a monkey and I could find all these same organs, right? Wow. Look at how alike we are with the animals. However, none of the animals are called into a contemplative union with God.
Right.
A mystical union with God.
A relationship with God.
Exactly.
To make it sound simple, yes.
Right. So what we have to do is figure out how that looks in real life. How does this play out?
Yes.
Right? And we tend to
What decisions must I make in order for this to be optimal?
Exactly. How do I fulfill this? How do I fulfill who I am, who I am made to be, right? So we tend to think we get it wrong when the pursuit of holiness, the pursuit of living in communion with God, brings on suffering.
All right. So now we're getting to the meat of the topic here, and that is surrendering to the will of God, no matter how difficult it may be. Now, Kent, there are some, we all suffer. All human beings suffer. It's our post-Eden state. Being on this earth, we're going to suffer until the next life. Now, often we bring about that suffering ourselves.
Yeah.
With our bad choices, there are consequences to them. And those reverberate throughout our lives sometimes. Other times, through no fault of our own, we find ourselves in a situation where there's a lot of suffering. And those are the times where a lot of people sort of look up to heaven and say, and ask why.
Yeah.
Now, here's my question to you. If, and this is an if, because we never really are fully aware of how much we have sort of caused, or at least the degree to which we have caused this suffering in our lives. But let's just say we can't see how we caused it. Through no fault of our own, we are suffering something catastrophic, or something that just, it doesn't go away. Is this God's will? And you can make the distinction between his positive and his indirect will, if you'd like. But is it God's will, and what do we do about it? How do we embrace it, if it is God's will, without passing the buck to somebody else?
There's so much to say on that. So I just want to highlight something that you just said, God's will.
Yeah.
We can break it into two aspects.
Right.
There's his, what's often called his ordaining will, where God is basically saying, this is what I want in the world. I want this. It would be great if things were like this.
This is the ideal according to God's will. So that would be, some philosophers call that God's positive will versus God's permissive will.
Right. The other one I was going to say was his permissive will. In other words, he sees that there's some evil, but he permits it for some reason. right? And the perfect example, we just lived through this with Holy Week, Christ's passion, his suffering and death.
The greatest evil in the universe.
Exactly. Yeah. So God, not only did he permit it, he entered into it. It was he himself who bore all this suffering. Why, though? So that some greater good would come out of it, right?
Yeah.
And so let's just set aside, you know, obviously we're talking about, we're focusing on what about the bad things that happen to us. How could that be God's will? And what do we do about that? Right. Now, the problem.
How do you surrender to it?
Yes. Okay. Exactly. So the problem we tend to have when we initially face any of this stuff is in our modern world, we are so kind of spoiled. I guess I could say life is so comfortable. All we have to do is go back, you know, a couple of generations and life was not nearly as easy sort of materially. As it is now. You know, I once heard somebody say that even the great pharaohs of Egypt didn't live as well as you or I in an apartment in a suburb of Boston.
Right.
Because they didn't have running water.
With electricity, with computers and televisions and cars.
Oh, my goodness. And a refrigerator full of food. Yeah. And
so materially, we haven't made historically speaking. However, like you and I know, that too much of that brings upon
corruption.
Immaterial corruption within the soul.
Right.
Unhappiness, stagnation, depression, anxiety, all
Jesus
of those things.
Jesus said it's easier for a rich man to pass through the eye of a needle than to enter into heaven. And it's not because people who are rich are automatically just sort of disqualified. It's that that kind of comfort tends to corrupt us. And so he didn't
take
say
our
it's impossible.
Exactly.
He didn't say it's impossible. We just kind of lose our edge.
Well,
right?
You know, so speaking of taking your eye off the ball, to use a metaphor or an analogy, if you are a professional basketball player and you're in the midst of the playoffs right now, and all of a sudden you start thinking of these, you're very comfortable on the bench. You have this incredibly comfortable, but you don't want to get up. And then you start thinking of these very comfortable things, and all of a sudden you're called upon to try to win the game. You're not going to be in the right mode.
Right.
You took your eye off the ball.
Right.
So that's what creature comforts tends to do with us post-Eden humans. We get too comfortable. We take our eye off the ball, and our intellect becomes a little more blind, our will a little more weak.
Yeah.
And we
lie there in our beds with the remote control in our hand or on the couch, and we're eating cookies or bonbons or whatever we're doing, and we're like, why am I miserable? Why am I miserable? Right? We don't really see the correlation that God created this whole vast universe for us to occupy, to act in. And when we're sitting passively watching television, surfing the internet, playing computer games, we're not being active participants in God's universe. We're not enacting God's will in creation. Right? Now, God's will is, as we were talking about before, to also have leisure, to also have rest. But we're making lifestyles out of leisure, whereas God gave us one day a week, right? So we're sort of like stuck in leisure mode. So then when some suffering comes at us, we're thinking, this is terrible, God. How could you allow this, right?
Yeah.
Now, so, as you were alluding to before, there are many ways to look at this. What is the meaning of this suffering? How could I be suffering? Here I am trying to do God's will. Let's say I'm not the couch potato. And I volunteer at the soup kitchen. And I have a bunch of kids I have to take care of. And I work for a living. And I, you know, have to love my wife and my neighbor. And
okay, so you're doing this normal. You're trying to be the best normal person you can be.
And something terrible befalls you, right?
Yeah.
A disease or a beloved person dies or a beloved person gets a disease. And you can't.
Or a breakup. A heartbreak of some sort.
Yeah, which is so chronic. So, and you're powerless to fix it, right? Your girlfriend leaves you or something, and you're doing everything you possibly can, everything you can think of to reverse this, to fix it, to make everything right. And we tend to, look, we live in a day and age where technology solves so many problems. It even solves problems that we didn't even know we had. And
well,
so
let's not go into another tangent now, because you're just getting right to it. Mm-hmm. How do we surrender? Well, how do we know that this suffering that I'm experiencing now is God's will?
Yeah.
And how do we surrender to that will?
Well, I would say this, and this might sound too simplistic, but
all right,
I think you need to let it sink in. We know it's God's will because it's happening.
Yep.
The fact that it's happening.
Even if I made it happen, or even if my neighbor made it, it doesn't matter who made it happen.
Even if I'm a perfect saint and I never did anything wrong, and someone's mugging me.
Yep.
God did not stop it. So he's at least willing to...
So you're saying as long as something is happening, we know that God is permitting it.
Right.
Okay, because of course, God is God.
Right.
So if something is happening, God is permitting it to happen. Therefore, in that permissive will of God, we have to look at it in that perspective. This is God's will. What do I do from here?
Right.
All right.
So... especially when we find that it's an inevitable thing, right? An unavoidable thing. In other words, if I'm getting mugged, it's okay for me to run away. It's okay if someone's attacking me, it's okay for me to run, and we'll see what God's will is there if I get away or not.
All right, I need to break this down. So you're saying that it is God's will that you run away, or it might be God's will that you stay there and fight, or it might be God's will that you just stand there and take the punch and try to talk to this person. In that part of the situation, you have to discern which of those three are God's will. Fight, flight, or turn the other cheek.
Yep.
But at least there is a choice to make there.
Exactly.
To use another similar analogy, and then we'll go to the break. If somebody is in pain with some kind of illness or accident, it may be God's will that you seek a medication to kill the pain, right? Mm-hmm. But once you're at a situation where there's nothing else you can do, you've tried everything else to relieve yourself from this particular suffering, whether it be physical or mental or spiritual, then you can realize this is God's will. I must embrace it.
Exactly. Yes.
So I'm going to ask you how you embrace it when we get back from the break. What does that mean to embrace heavy suffering? 978-454-4980. Give us a call or jot your own suggestions or thoughts or comments down at paulmorano.com. We need to take a quick break. Last break of the evening. We'll be right back right after this. We're back. Segment number three, Beneath the Surface. Paul Morano with my guest, Mr. Kent Niebuhr, delving beneath the surface tonight on the topic of surrendering to the will of God, no matter how difficult. So, before the break, Mr. Kent, we were going over a scenario where if we find ourselves in a difficult situation, whether it be something that we had created ourselves or something given to us that we have no power over, we can look for situations that alleviate the problem, like painkillers, medication, counseling, everything that we can do as long as it's within the moral realm of doing it. For example, you cannot try to combat loneliness by indulging in pornography, for example.
Just excessive drinking. You're just going to stay drunk
exactly.
Or something. Yep.
So as long as it's within the realm of moral living, one can try to alleviate the situation. But while you're doing that, and even if you have exhausted all situations where you can alleviate it, it's time then, Kent, to realize that this suffering, this pain is God's will, and I need to embrace it. Now, that doesn't mean it's going to feel good.
Right.
On a certain level.
Yeah.
But your trust of God in trusting that he would not permit this in my life unless he was going to bring a greater good out of this.
Right.
Because God is God, and that's what he promises if we trust him. Yes?
Yes. St. Paul says, first of all, that God will not expect us, God will not sort of put any suffering on us that we cannot bear with his grace.
With God's help, yes.
Right? So you can be sure that whatever suffering you are faced with, if it's inevitable, that God is providing you his grace to bear it.
Right. And again, that's not going to make it pleasant, but there'll be, even in a deeper part of your human nature, you will feel or intuit or have a comfort underneath all of that suffering.
You know, it's even, Paul, I will say, even if it kills you.
Literally.
Literally kills you. I mean, we just celebrated Easter, and before that, Christ's passion, his death on the cross, and all the suffering that led up to that.
Yeah.
So,
if it kills you, you can never choose your own death.
Exactly.
I just wanted to make that.
You can surrender to it. You can accept it.
As, like when a disease is killing you and you're on your deathbed.
Right. But you cannot go out seeking, how can I increase my suffering? How can I increase my suffering?
Or how can I end my life?
Yeah,
this is all in the realm of serious sin.
Right.
All right. So now we're just talking about what is given to us and how we accept that.
Right. So first of all, it's in times like this, it's good to think about, maybe read about, really ponder. We would say meditate or contemplate Christ's sufferings. Right. And it's beautiful. The dialogue between Christ and Pontius Pilate, where Pontius Pilate says to him, do you not realize that I have the power to crucify you or to set you free? And Jesus says, you would have no power over me were it not granted to you from above. In other words, Christ could have walked out of there. Nothing could have stopped. He said, I could call down these heavenly legions of angels.
That's right.
To defend me. He could have done it. And in another place in the Gospels, Jesus says, no one takes my life from me. I lay it down of my own will.
Yes.
Right? So what he's saying is he is accepting this suffering that is part of his, as I said earlier, his mission in the world, part of why he exists.
Okay.
Is to embrace this suffering, to accept this suffering.
Now, let me just, there's a way to understand that.
Yeah.
I mean, Christ didn't come into the world to suffer and to, just to suffer without any context.
Yeah.
I mean, God would not want anybody to suffer without there being a greater good that comes forth from it.
And a meaning.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the mission of Christ was to take on the sufferings that we should have gotten.
Right.
To take the hit for us and our sins so that we can be saved from the guilt of those sins, which is eternal death.
Right.
So there's a meaning and a context behind Christ's suffering, and he is the ultimate model in how to embrace that cross, I think is what you're saying.
Yeah.
But here we are as his children, and we have a portion of that cross, you could say, in our own lives. Everybody has a different version of it.
Mm-hmm.
So we must embrace that cross.
Right.
Not that we look for crosses. They're given to us.
Right.
But once they're given to us, we must embrace them without further... This is, I think, the trick to it. Don't pass the buck. Don't give that suffering and that negativity that comes to somebody else.
Right. I once heard
a deacon. I mean, isn't that what abortion is all about, really?
Yeah. And
I feel like I'm suffering, and therefore I'm going to take it out on the one that is making me suffer.
Yeah.
We can't do that.
Right.
We need to suffer well.
We need
to suffer morally.
I recently heard Deacon Harold Burke Sivers describe divorce as parents taking their crosses off their shoulders and putting them on their kids.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So now the kids have to bear it. What you say to the kids
throughout
is, kids,
their life.
You just need to understand we have to do this. So I'm sorry. You're just going to have to deal with this.
I agree. I think that's it.
So that's what's happening there. Now, here's how one of the little things I ponder. I was going to say a trick, but it's not a trick. I ponder this when I'm faced with suffering that I cannot avoid.
Yeah.
The world is damaged by sin. The world is continually redamaged by sin.
Yes.
Christ came into the world to take some of that away, or at least the guilt of it, away And the way I visualize this is when Christ...
Well, ultimately, all of it away after the resurrection,
right.
at the end of history.
At the end of time, but we're still in it right now. You and I are still in it. So the way I visualize that is I think of two things in the life of Christ. He began his public ministry by going down to the Jordan River where throngs of people were going to the Jordan River to be baptized by John the Baptist. They were going into the river. John was baptizing them for penance, and they want to rid themselves of their sin. They want to rid themselves of their guilt. So the imagery that I ponder, and this isn't exactly what was happening, but at least in the minds of the people who were getting baptized, they're washing away their sins. We know that sacramental baptism in the Catholic Church does wash away sins, but what they were doing, since Christ had not instituted this yet, they were going through this, right? So you imagine the, just visualize, for me, this is how I do this, visualize all these people, thousands of people, and just visualize their sins getting washed off into the Jordan River, then Jesus appears. He goes into the river, and what is, he has no sin.
Right.
So what's he doing in the river? And John the Baptist even asks him this, and Jesus says, just do it. I envision all those sins that are filling the waters of the Jordan River being absorbed by Christ and taken, and those waters are purified. In fact, there's a teaching in the Catechism that says something about Jesus purified all waters by his baptism in the Jordan. And then the other thing I think of is when he would touch a leper, if you touched a leper, or if I touched a leper, we would become lepers.
Yeah.
But Jesus was pure and perfect. Mm. He touched a leper.
Right.
And the leper and became pure and perfect. So where did the leprosy go? He absorbed it because God is infinite love. When you absorb any evil, whether it's physical or moral, natural evil or moral evil, when you absorb that into love, it dissipates in infinity. Evil is finite. Love is infinite. So God, Jesus, is like this sort of sponge that absorbs us. Archbishop Fulton Jean said the only way, let that sink in, the only way to conquer evil is to absorb it into love.
Mm.
Right? So when I'm suffering, I need to think of myself as this love sponge, this divine love sponge, where God is sending me in the world and he says, Kent, there's all this sin in the world. I need you to soak some of it up.
Mm, okay.
To make the world a better place, take on some of that sin, just like your Lord and Master, who you were baptized into at your baptism, who you become one with in the Eucharist. You, like him, need to take part in his ministry and absorb some of this sin into the love I have infused in you and your baptism, your confirmation.
So this is the mission of every Christian?
Every Christian exists to rid the world of sin by absorbing it.
So in other words, just one thing I take from this is that a lot of people who maybe a little weak in their faith or they're not perfect in their faith need to have good people like this in their lives.
Yeah.
Because to ask them to simply, well, let me ask you this. Do you think that a person can have this dissipate by virtue of just a relationship with God without other people acting as mediums to God in their lives?
I'll go one better, and I'll say, even if, like, I think of suffering this way. I have great friends around me who reinforce this sort of thinking and support me in this sort of thinking. Yeah. I go to
Mass.
That's
important.
I receive the sacraments, the Eucharist. I receive all this grace to do it, and I still fail at it.
So in other words, the love of God, of course, is the source. And
ultimately,
that's what gives everything.
But how do we receive the love of God?
That's the question. So how do we receive that ultimate? Like, with some people, it does come directly, at times, of course.
Receptivity is a big...
We all receive God's love directly, but very often it comes sort of through channels, through instruments, through people, whether they be priests, family members, friends, acquaintances.
Complete strangers.
And you're saying, so we have to man up. We have to accept our crosses, and we have to be Christ to other people so that they can help them carry their own crosses in life.
We tend to think, I want to be like the Christ who was like preaching on the, on the, on the Mount, and you know, the Sermon on the Mount, and everybody just loved him and adored him. But we also need to think of being the Christ who was scourged, who was crucified, who was spit on, who was struck.
For the sake of others, you're
for the
saying.
He from the cross, he said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." That has to be us.
All right, so we need to have that awareness. And that's the strong part of us.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with the minute we have left, focus on the weak part of us, the part that needs the love.
Yeah.
That needs to receive that love.
Right.
Go ahead.
Now, we will say to ourselves, well, I can't take all this suffering because I need to build myself up. Mm-hmm. Right? But the irony is, with God, in the life of the Christian, the more you pour yourself out, the more God fills you up. We have to think of ourselves as conduits, not receptacles.
So become less selfish and do something good for somebody.
Exactly. Receive the grace from God and pass it along.
I think somebody who is very unhappy, depressed, asked Fulton Sheen, I have a miserable life. What do I do, Fulton Sheen? And the thing he said, the one thing you should do is forget yourself and go do something good for somebody else.
Right.
That'll begin the turnaround.
Even if it's a small, even if it's just go get up and do the dishes or something. It doesn't have to be go to, you know, be a missionary or go to a soup kitchen.
Right.
Do something good for others.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Wow. Surrendering to the will of God, no matter how difficult. And of course,
we need extra innings.
And doing that, of course, enables us to be one with him for all eternity. Thank you, Mr. Kent Niebuhr. Thank you for listening, everybody. You've been listening to Beneath the Surface. Paul Morano signing off. Check out my Facebook. Check out my website again, paulmorano.com. Cindy's Vinyl Vault coming up next. Have a great week pondering what we talked about, and I will too. God bless.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com.
CMF Curo is the country's first Catholic healthcare ministry to provide an affordable health sharing solution rooted in Catholic teaching and community. Learn more at mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast. That's mycatholichealthcare.com/podcast.